We're just going to do this for a couple more weeks, looking at particular themes through the book of Proverbs. Last week we looked at laziness. Today we're going to be looking at wine and the wisdom of wine. And I'm actually going to aim to finish up at about a quarter to, if that's possible. It may not be possible. Just so that we can have some questions at the end, maybe 10 to. Because on the issue of wine, Christians hold quite a diverse range of views. And so I'm hoping that we can come around the Bible now, get into the Word of God, and but still allow time for questions at the end in case you want to bring up a point that you feel should have been made. Well, I'd actually like to start by reading the last part of the Bible reading that we had. So I think it's a great reading. I actually heard some people laugh as it was read. So let's just have a look at it again. Chapter 23, verse 29. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has strife? Who has complaints? Who has blood, needless bruises? Who has bloodshot eyes? Those who linger over wine, those who sample bowls of mixed wine. Do not gaze at wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. In the end it bites like a snake and poisons like a viper. Your eyes will see strange sights, and your mind imagine confusing things. You'll be like one sleeping on the high seas, laying on top of the rigging. They hit me, you'll say, but I'm not hurt. They beat me, but I don't feel it. When will I wake up so I can find another drink? Now, I think for some people, for many people in our society, alcohol and that binge drinking that we see here and getting drunk is something that you laugh at. It is. That's the way. That's part of our culture, I think. I don't know if it's the same as when I was at uni, but when I was at school and at uni, people would boast about getting drunk and not being able to remember what had happened. Is that still the same? That's sort of the mark of a party, like at the high point of the party is when someone who's really drunk does something really stupid. That's sort of seen as, you know, the great thing. In fact, I was not knowing that getting so drunk and then not knowing what's happened in the morning is such a mark of having a good time sometimes. There was a story up in Parramatta, up in Sydney, where Parramatta River used to be really dirty. All the factories used just to pour their rubbish straight into it. But they cleaned it up, and so the river was in good condition, and life returned to the river again. And there was this young bloke, and he went out drinking with his mates, and they went down to the river, and he fell off the wharf. He was really drunk, fell off, climbed back up, went home, woke up in the morning, and he had all these cuts all over him. And they were pretty serious cuts. And he went to the hospital. They're that serious on the back and on the front up here, these big cuts. And he'd actually been attacked by a shark. And he didn't know. I reckon that's got to be a good story to boast about if you're into boasting about drinking stories. I got attacked by a shark, a reasonable sized shark, without even knowing it. They hit me, he says here. They hit me, you'll say. I'm not hurt. They beat me and I don't feel it. I get bitten by a shark, I don't even feel it. And of course, alcohol is a really good excuse, isn't it? You can excuse all sorts of behaviour when you're drunk. And so people will say, well, you know, I did this, this and this, but I was drunk. And it allows people to act freely. In fact, judges will even take it into account when they sentence you if you've done something stupid. They'll say, well, you were drunk, so therefore we'll be more lenient to you. But it can be a great excuse to just do what you want to do. And so for the world, for some aspects of the world, getting drunk is part of youth culture. It's a bit of a joke, really. It's a bit of a joke. Now, alcohol is used in various ways in our society. Sometimes people use it as just for social drinking, to socialise, to sit down and talk with each other, and we'll be looking at that a little bit later. But for other people, it may not be a joke, it may not be a social thing, it might actually be a real problem. And I need to understand that in a group of this size, to even be talking about alcohol as being a joke might have been a way of grating you. You might have been thinking, you don't know my family. You don't know what alcohol has done to my family. It's not a joke at all. I don't find it much of a joke. I want to say I acknowledge you. If that's the way you're feeling, I understand that, and I'm taking that into account as we we look at this today. Because alcohol is a problem. Let's have a look then at the wisdom that we find in the book of Proverbs about alcohol. Chapter 20, verse 1. Wine is a mocker and beer a brawler. Whoever is led astray by them is not wise. Wine is a mocker and beer is a brawler, but whoever is led astray by them is not wise. Here we see people being led astray by wine, being led astray by alcohol. Now, what does that mean? Is it that a bottle of beer actually drags you away? How is it that alcohol leads people? Well, all of us are led by something in our life. There is something that drives you as a person, something that shapes your life, something that informs the decisions you make, something that is a characteristic mark of who you are, something that leads you, that shapes your life. And what we're told here is if that alcohol is what shapes your life, if alcohol is what leads you, then it's going to be characterized by brawling and mocking and really by destruction. Now, because alcohol is such a part of our community, and binge drinking and getting drunk is such a part, we actually see this destruction in our community. So, for instance, when I was at Moore College used to be a small college next to a big pub. So people would stay at the Bible College, and they would live there, and there was a little alleyway, it's called Little Queen Street now, but it was known as Blood Alley. And that was because in inner city pubs in Sydney, people are regularly being killed and beaten up. Even when I lived at college, just down the road at the pub, the police came around, cordoned off the area, someone had just been killed in a drunken fight. And Blood Alley, this was a big pub, and people were often getting beaten up, so much so they just called it Blood Alley. And that was just normal. We see that there's violence, not only just from drunk people attacking each other, but there's violence within homes. Domestic violence is often fueled by alcohol. And so whoever's led by alcohol is a bore. And if we count the cost of alcohol to our society, now I got on the internet yesterday, and I've got some useful statistics here for you, all from government agencies. So just listen to what drunkenness costs our community. I won't go through all the percentages there, but basically 21% of all fatal accidents come from alcohol being involved. 21%, that's one in five. That's probably the biggest chunk of any reason why it happens. One in five deaths on the road happens because of alcohol. And then you think about all the families who never got to say goodbye to their father, brother, sister, whoever it was. Or because people have got drunk. There was recently an advertising campaign where it had 200 people standing up, and they said whenever one person dies, there's about 200 other people who are affected by it. And so when 21% of fatal accidents are happening because of alcohol, there's 200 people behind each of those other people who are affected because of alcohol. And just from a crass financial point of view, you imagine if you could reduce all the expenses that come from the accidents and the fatalities that come from alcohol, imagine what that would do to our insurance policies on our cars. So the reason why you have to pay so much money insurance, part of the reason is because of the way that alcohol is used in our society. Alcohol, it's estimated, costs us $3.5 billion a year in Australia. Now, I can say that number and you go, well, what does that mean? What does $3.5 billion mean? Well, I'll put some other values there so you can compare it. We only spend $10.2 billion on education. So it's about 40% of education we spend on alcohol. The same with defence. One in five hospital beds are taken up with people who are there as a result of alcohol. So you can see, it's a massive cost to our society, something that we all have to pay for, and it's no laughing matter. Alcohol is no laughing matter, and this drunkenness. As it says here, wine is a mocker and beer is a brawler. Whoever is led astray by them is not wise. And I think when a society has it as such a large part of its youth culture, then that's not wise either. However, image is everything, isn't it? Image is everything in today's world, and alcohol is cool. It's promoted as being cool. You know, you go into a pub or somewhere, or like when was the last movie you saw where the big macho character, the bloke goes up to the pub and says, "I'll have an orange juice, please." This doesn't happen, does it? Because the cool bloke gets a straight whiskey and just sculls it, because that's cool. So you go and ask for a, you know, an orange juice or a shandy. Can I have a shandy, please? It's just not cool. And it's weird, but there are authorities. I don't know about this university, but I know of other universities where they are happy for the students to go out and get blind drunk and just carry on in all types of drunkenness. That's okay, but they don't have any Christian activities on the campus. That's a bit perverse, isn't it? So you can go out, and they don't mind you. They'll build a pub right on the campus for you. They give you all the permission and the printing to have your big events where you can get blind off your face. That's all okay. They won't say anything about that. But yeah, if you want to be a Christian, you want to stand up for Christ, then they'll... I'm not saying that this uni is this way, but I know of others that are, where actually they'll oppose Christian activity and that they're quite happy for people to be drunkards. That's a bit of a perversity there. Now, there is a wisdom, though, to wine. You would think that wine is really, it's pretty darn obvious that it's not a good thing to have. But why is it that so many people do it? Maybe before you became a Christian, you used to do it as well. Maybe you used to drink a lot, go to parties and carry on. Maybe by God's grace you've been spared that through godly parents or something. But for some of you, I assume that that's actually the background you did come from. Were you just stupid? Well, I don't think you were just stupid. I think you were following the wisdom of this world. Because there is a wisdom behind wine. There is a wisdom behind getting drunk. What is that wisdom? Well, you see, our society has rejected God. Our society has rejected God. And when you reject God and you're no longer led by God, well, what do you do? What are you led by? And so if we look at our society, we see that people are led by fashion. Fashion has a massive hold on people within our society. What to look like, the latest fashion, or popularity, or sport. Sport is the leading influence. Sport is what shapes millions of Australians' lives. Or else it's their families. Or else it might be going to parties and getting drunk. That's what shapes your life. Or it might be that your life is characterised by pot smoking. The whole pot smoking crowd has got their own identity, haven't they? And that's what shapes their life. That's their little subculture that they have. Or it might be your work or your uni work. But see, in our society, when we reject God, we follow other things. We follow other ideas. And other ideas like sport and fashion and work, these are the ideas that lead us and shape our lives. And alcohol is one of them. When you reject God, getting drunk is not such a bad idea. Let me just read to you from 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 32. Paul quotes the Old Testament, and he says here, sort of halfway through, he said, "If the dead are not raised, then let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." So if the dead are not raised, that is, if there's no God who's going to raise anybody, if there's no God to do anything, well, you may as well just eat and drink. Because what's going to happen tomorrow? You're going to die sometime? Why not get blind off your face and have a bit of a laugh? You can see the wisdom there, can't you? People getting drunk, it's not a completely mindless activity. It's a consistent activity for people who don't know God. And so in our society, people will live for fashion. People will live for parties. People will live just for the moment. People will live for food. You know, when you get the paper and it tells you all about the latest types of foods, all the best restaurants, for many people, that's all their life consists of. There is nothing more in their life than food. There is nothing more in their life than the latest wine that they can look at glistening in the cup. And that's all they have in their life. And so if that's all there is to life, then eat, drink, be merry, for tomorrow you go to oblivion. That's the wisdom of wine. There is that wisdom of the world. But of course the Bible says to us, and Jesus says to us, that there's more to life than just food and drink. There's more to life than just the pleasures of this world. There's God. There's God. Now I just want you to think for a moment. What shapes your life? What shapes your life? I want you to imagine that we've got some surveys here. We're often giving you bits of paper at Focus. I want you to imagine we've got a special survey sheet that we give out to you. And on this survey, you actually get five of them, and you've got to give them to five of your friends. Five of your friends that you trust. And the survey is that this person, these five friends, have got to write down what they see as shaping your life. What they see as the purpose of your life. What they see as the characteristic of your life. What drives your life. Now imagine you've got those five sheets and you give them out. What do you think your friends are going to write? What would your friends write down for you as what is the characteristic of your life? Would they say that you live for fashion, for popularity, for sport, maybe for wine? I know most of you here. Or would they say, no, you live for God. You live for something bigger and beyond just the things of this world. You actually live for God. You see, that's where we get alcohol wrong, isn't it? When we stop serving God and start living for the things of this world, that's when drunkenness becomes so terrible. That's when drunkenness takes off. That's when people get drunk because they've got nothing else to do. Imagine having nothing better to do than to get drunk and think that that's great. It's pathetic, isn't it? It's pathetic that our society could have so brainwashed young people, really just for making profit out of them, that the binge drinking and that whole party scene, that's cool. I think that's a sad reflection of our society, but it's a reflection on a society that is godless. Because when you're godless, that's all you've got left, the things of this world. Now, what I wanted to do quickly is to just look at what does God actually say about wine. We've sort of looked about some of the wisdom of wine there. But what does the Bible actually say about wine? Like, what are we to think of it as Christians? Are we to think that it's evil, that we must never touch it? What do you do? Well, as I say this, I want to make it clear that I don't drink alcohol, and neither does my wife. And so that's the background that I'm coming from. And so when you'll hear what I've got to say, I'm not promoting a particular... I'm not promoting my own bandwagon. Because the Bible does not say that you must not have alcohol. It does not call for the abolition of alcohol. In Deuteronomy, I'll just read these out for the sake of time, Deuteronomy 14, we're actually told that when the Israelites have got their money and they're coming to worship God, it says in verse 26, use the silver to buy whatever you like, cattle, sheep, wine, or other fermented drink, or anything you wish. Then you and your household shall eat there in the presence of the Lord your God and rejoice. So on part of the temple grounds, when the Israelites went to worship God, they were to bring wine or other fermented drink and have a party before God. So we can't say that alcohol is evil. In fact, in Isaiah 25 verse 6, fine wine is seen as a picture of heaven. It's one of the pictures of heaven. So you can actually have a social drink. I think being social with wine and using it responsibly is the way that the Bible says to handle wine. But we do need to be careful as Christians. As I've said, some of you may have come from backgrounds where alcohol has been abused and you've suffered greatly. And you may not like me saying that wine is not evil. I think that is the Bible's teaching. However, we do need to be gentle with each other on this issue. Maybe you don't have a problem with wine, but somebody else might. And we're not to hurt each other in this regard. Look at, I'll just read out Romans 14, verse 21. It is better not to eat meat or drink wine or to do anything else that will cause your brother to fall. It is better not to eat meat or drink wine or do anything else that will cause your brother to fall. And see, I know some people, I can think of one young bloke, who became a Christian. And he really came from the pot-smoking, drinking background. And he moved into the Christian circle. I won't use his name. He moved into the Christian circle. And he was making a bit of a go of it. You know, he came along to church, went along to camps and various things, got into things. But he'd had a really big... alcohol and drugs were a major part of his life. And he met up with some Christians, and these other Christians, they really knew their freedom. They knew that alcohol wasn't evil and that they could use it rightly with self-control, and they did. And so they'd invite him out to have a drink with them. But he wasn't really able to handle that. And in fact, he fell away and went right back to that lifestyle, because he wasn't strong enough at that time to handle it. And the freedom of his friends actually led to him falling. Rather than his friends taking time, and I'm not saying this would be an easy thing to do, but to understand that for him that was a problem, they actually said, "No, let's go back to the pub and have a drink together." And for them it wasn't a problem, but for him it was. And he actually fell away because of their freedom. So you need to be careful how you use your alcohol. As a Christian, you've got to know your limitations. If it's a problem for you, then don't go near the pub. And I think for some of you, it may mean total abstinence. It may mean not having any at all, just for your own salvation, for your own sake, for your own safety. Now, as Christians, we're not to let wine dictate the way we live. So that there's a verse in Ephesians 5:18 which says, "Don't get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery, but instead be filled with the Spirit of God." You see, getting drunk always leads to debaucherous behaviour, doesn't it? Like immoral behaviour. I was reading about the French football, the Dutch football team, and the Dutch football team. Their supporters travel around with them around Europe. And wherever the Dutch football team go, after there's a win, I think it's a win or lose, I'm not sure, but maybe it might have been whatever, we'll assume it's a win, the supporters just have a huge party where, to some degree, it sounds just like a huge orgy happens. And so wherever the Dutch football team, the day after the competition, there's a huge sale in the morning after abortion pills, because there's a couple of thousand of them who go, and all the girls go out the next morning and get the abortion pills to have the morning after pill. And so there's a big spike in sales in all these European countries from where the Dutch football team goes. But you see, what brings about those abortions? Well, it's because they get drunk and it leads to debauchery. And as a Christian, that's not to be your way. You're not to be led by wine. You're to be led by Christ. You know, if you're not a Christian, I want to say there is more to life than just the food you eat and the drink you drink, or the car you own, or the computer you've got, or the videos that you've got, or your CD collection. There's more to life than those things. There's the life that you can have with God. The life that Christ calls us to have. The life that will last forever. And I think that's why in this chapter, it starts off by talking about, you know, don't eating meat, and think about the things above. Think about the things of God. I guess that's what we want you to do here at Focus, is to lift your eyes off just the things of this world, and to set your eyes on the things of God, to think about the things of God, to take the things of God seriously. That's why Jesus came. Jesus came so that you could know God. Jesus came so that you could have a relationship with God. Jesus came so that you could be free from just having nothing better to do than to get drunk, but that you can have a relationship with God that will last forever. And that's what Jesus brings us.